Welcome to Between the Lines. Listening to literature online. This is show number 100. Be Cohere Now and the 100th Monkey. Show is kind of verbal essay riffing on the title, but for now I want to highlight this intro song and the music, give thanks to Yang Ying. It's a track called Wandering from her wonderful CD Elixir, and she also has other CDs, World Fusion Music, Blurring Boundaries, Meditation CD, Six Healing Sounds, Qigong, and she's coming out with a new one that has a category of New Age and World Fusion. Her website is Yang Ying, YANGYING-music.com. This is your host, Monk. Thank you for listening. Going to riff and roll on the title, starting off with Be Cohere Now. Now, one of my favorite people to listen to, one of the most powerful, insightful speakers I've ever heard, is John Trudell, who's Santee Sioux Lakota and part Mexican as well. And he uses the word coherent a lot to perceive reality in a clear and coherent fashion. And it wasn't until someone sent me an email with the word coherent that it just kind of clicked what the word cohere means. I mean, we know what it means to hold together, to work together. Definition has to stick together, be united, hold fast. In physics, be united within the body of the action of molecular forces, to be naturally or logically connected, to agree, to be congruous. Now, I like that, naturally and logically connected. Natural laws are a phrase espoused by indigenous peoples. And then looking at the word, to cohere is to be here together, to be aware, and sort of updating the famous phrase. Ram Dass's book Be Here Now came out way back. It's kind of a mantra for for a lot of people. Be here now, be in the moment. And certainly it serves its purpose. And Ram Dass was one of the first people I ever read back in college when I started to learn of a different way of seeing things, learned about the chakras and different energies and such like. But seeing the word coherent, it just struck me how be coherent now is, to me, more of a helpful phrase, because it reminds me that it's not just me here. I'm with whoever, and it reminds of the Native peoples, all our relations or all my relations, how we're all connected. So, I think some of the New Age stuff gets caught up in one's own identity or one's own awareness. If I can just be here now, then I will feel better and things will go smoothly. Well, yeah, but what about be cohere now? And how can we work together? Because that's a lot of what's needed nowadays. So not a whole lot more to say about cohere now. That's the phrase that Trudell uses, clear and coherent use of our intelligence. And he's got lots of video talks up on YouTube. Recommend a couple of shorter ones called Identity Crisis, Mining Minds. And John Trudell speaks at the California Chemtrail Convergence. And then along those lines, here's a quote from a recent article by Robert Bonomo, The Seven Pillars of the Matrix, at dissidentvoice.org is where I first read it. The search for enlightenment rarely, if ever, bears fruits in those temples of words, our schools and universities. Almost all traditions point to isolation and silence as the only paths to awakening. They are the true antidotes to modern slavery. Now that's fitting for the title of this show, Between the Lines, because as I've said over and over, as much as I love and work with words, it's also an ongoing effort to pay attention to and encourage the between the lines, and that the experience is different than just the words, although they kind of feed each other. The 100th monkey, that's sort of the bulk of this show. That's a phrase. When I looked it up, the explanation, it wasn't definitive. There was a study done a while ago on some island where the monkeys were learning to do something with a sweet potato or clean a sweet potato. And the point was that by the time that the 100th monkey had learned it, then the behavior became, dominant, not necessarily dominant, but it became pervasive with the whole monkeys, with the whole society. And then my research said that it wasn't necessarily a true study, or I don't know whether it is or is not. It's still, the principle is what I find fascinating, and that's what I'm going to riff mostly on, that the 100th monkey in a way connects with phrases that we use, tipping points and paradigm shifts. So that's a major thing going on. Now there's a book called, which I haven't read, but I looked up, The 100th Monkey by Ken Keyes Jr., K-E-Y-E-S. Now at first I thought that was Ken Kesey, the Merry Prankster, the 60s and such like, but it's a different guy, Ken Keyes. So I'm going to read a little bit from that, from the Wikipedia page, or some from his site, I think it was. This book is not copyrighted. You are asked to reproduce it in whole or in part, to distribute it with or without charge in as many languages as possible to as many people as possible. Keyes employed no explicit strategies to ensure his organization would continue or grow without him, and he did nothing that would promote any established organization or personal legacy. He focused instead on teaching his methods. He never sought out a major publisher for his books, but self-published them all, and even brought back in-house one book that had been placed with a major publisher. Of the three teaching centers he founded, only the last was eponymous. Keyes claimed that through the use of his methods, he spent almost all of his later life in a state of nearly constant happiness, and some of his followers, and said his methods, had the same impact on their own lives. And some of what he writes is, when will we learn that it is only our emotion-backed demands that make us create the internal experience of unhappiness? Our egos and rational minds are so good at making us feel and think that the problem of human separateness lies in the outside world and not inside ourselves. With practice, this mental skill of inner flexibility will make us even more effective and powerful. It takes a strong person to be able to lovingly but directly communicate what he or she wants to someone who disagrees and acts hostile. You will increase your skill in helping the world when you learn to be mentally flexible. This means being able to constantly blend back into creating an experience of life as a whole with appreciation, cooperativeness, and love for the people around you, even when they oppose you. We haven't yet become effective at operating our minds and our emotions to create that subtle blend of both head and heart that lets us use our treasure chest of inner wisdom. Well, some have, but so that's on a global scale. We're working on it. This wisdom is kept tightly locked up when our egos and minds run off the tapes that continually create the illusion of separateness. Only by opening our minds and hearts will we find the rich, intuitive wisdom that always lies within every human being, even if it isn't used. The conflicting energies in our world are so great today that perhaps we need the millionth monkey to project the energy of wholeness and cooperation, of friendship and love, of sharing life on this planet together. And in capital letters, whatever that critical number is, you are needed to save our civilization. You are essential. It may be that without you, it will not happen and our species will hurtle itself into partial or complete destruction. Well, that's I've heard that mentioned. Chief Arvel Looking Horse was mentioning that about, you know, what's going on in today's world and that it's up to each individual and paraphrasing that, you know, that is why each of us is incarnated at this time, because each of us is here for some reason, some agreement with our creator or whoever you want to call it, and that in essence, you, whatever way, in actions large or small, have a way to help protect and preserve, you know, the what's going on, the world, Mother Earth, etc., etc. Yeah, the thing I started pondering about the 100th monkey is how things catch on or quickly or slowly, and that what are these tipping points, both in you know, in any case, I mean, on the bigger picture, it's say something to do like renewable energies and how do we shift from the fossil fuel industrial era to this renewable sustainable energies. Of course, if the prices were much more affordable, all of a sudden things would shift. If solar panels and all that stuff became way cheap, then that could be the tipping point. There was an article about Israel and about, you know, really the a lot of the battling going on is about oil and resources. So if all of a sudden the oil was not the main thing, think of all the places in the world where there's battles over oil and natural gas and other forms of energy, and if that shifted and there was no need for that, that would be the 100th monkey there. On a somewhat of a more mundane level, I think of things like the phone and the TV, now the computer, where excepting for, say, the digital divide and, you know, the very poor, at least in, you know, Western society and Europe and stuff, and more worldwide, everybody's got a phone. Everybody's got a TV, sometimes 5 or 10 TVs in one house. And everybody's got a computer. So, you know, how does it happen? Where are these tipping points? What shifts it? I don't know the exact answer, but I'm mentioning these things so that one may ponder how this affects, you know, in other than these material things, but more on a more to do with the consciousness level and with the you know, the environment, helping the Mother Earth, however, whatever ways we describe all this, helping the Earth and the world survive in a peaceful way. Nowadays I see it happening along the lines of the phone, where so many people in the neighborhood have these electric air blowers, and it's like I just find them auditorially offensive. And aside from the seeming ludicrousness of blowing dust somewhere else, but it's like it makes me ponder, what is the psychology that that has people then, you know, using these things. Another kind of tipping point in the media is people like Oprah or Dr. Oz, where, you know, Oprah comes out and praises a book, and or Oz comes out and says, you know, eat this, and overnight it becomes books can go to number one just because Oprah says so, or stuff like that. So it's like those are sort of these built-in media tipping points that are used in a more serious propagandic way when it comes to news, and people's, you know, views get swayed, and to present, you know, another way of seeing it is often people are sometimes are dumbfounded because that's what they saw on the TV or the mainstream news. So again, there's this propaganda, the news, how we view the world, quote, good guys, bad guys, and that's one area I see as a key 100th monkey tipping point paradigm shift. And then another area is the respect for peoples and the resources and that whole geopolitical tangle that is connected with the environment and energy sources. Now, to kind of dovetail these two, think of the Tao Te Ching, which emphasizes being thrifty and you know, using just enough, or doing things just enough, and on a material level, just using just enough. Now, because of the more difficult economy, a lot of people are paring down the stuff that they've gathered over the years. And you know, some of that stuff thing comes from a society framework of you work hard, you get your stuff, and you know, some of that's nice. It's nice to be able to go out and get some stuff. But that, I think that sort of successful paradigm of work hard, get some stuff, we're being seen on the global picture that the illusion of that paradigm as the answer to you know, helping preserve the environment. And also, it's up to the individual on what level their consciousness goes as far as how much stuff they have or don't have. But I think that we're starting to see this societal trend that, you know, the government imposes it as austerity measures, but those are in essence false because they're spending money on, you know, military and national security surveillance, all kinds of gadgetry. So again, this sort of tipping point is how long will it go that people buy into that and that the money goes there, rather than going to other things. That's one of the most significant stats I've heard in the last bunch of months, is that the amount of money spent per year, say maybe $1 trillion worldwide, that goes towards military and hardware, which for the most part whose bent is destruction and killing. If that money was spent on renewable, sustainable energy, on preserving the environment, helping people with food and water and basic resources, that would be a humongous paradigm shift, and, you know, would virtually change the scope of how things get handled overnight. I don't know about overnight, but the psychology can change overnight or in a minute. And some of that societal thing, I think, is also connected again with how we're raised and the whole sort of school system, how one is educated, one's religion, all these kind of boxes that people get put in as, this is what you do, this is what you follow to be successful. So that becomes like the accepted norm. Now, why not virtually everyone saying, oh, one of my life goals is to communicate with the plants, or to communicate with the trees, or to speak to the deva or the guardian of the birds, or something along those nature, along that lines. What if that was like a main paradigm? And to that, think of other cultures, different, you know, societies, cultures that do encourage that. A lot of the indigenous peoples, that's their natural way. And various, you know, Taoist philosophies, mystics, they all tend to be more attuned to that stuff. So, but I think, again, it's how we perceive these things and how we we think of what's important is a kind of that hinge point of why is this important while this is not. I mean, ultimately, it's that's a whole other question of control, and you know, I think a lot of it boils down to controlling the people and controlling the stuff. Now, another kind of overview that's been touched on in other shows is that this we're sort of living in a be cohere now and 100th monkey time, where we have a lot of these prophecies coming from various traditions, a lot of indigenous peoples' prophecies, the Mayan 2012, the changing of the era, and these cycles that really are, along with the climate crash, not just speaking but screaming, change is in the air. And so how we align and what we do with these is, again, essential to where things go. And again, it touches in with the tipping points and how do we work together to do this. Recent headline of Ohio, state of emergency leaves 400,000 without water. Something to do with Lake Erie and the agricultural... has to do with public drinking water, quote, due to dangerous levels of toxins that likely stem from a large algae bloom fed by farm fertilizer pollution. Well, here we have a case where all this talk and discussion about is it climate change or isn't climate change and this and that and blah, 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 but this, it seems like some of these karmic rebounds, these in-the-face results that may be the biggest, speaking point when the Mother Earth is going to be already with change of weather, and these kind of news is speaks louder than anybody's research and logic, thought out logic. It's just right in the face there. Look at what these actions are doing. And another going along another lines of the monkey was an article in The Guardian with a headline, Japanese monkeys' abnormal blood linked to Fukushima disaster. Wild monkeys in the Fukushima region of Japan have blood or abnormalities linked to the radioactive fallout from the 2011 nuclear power plant disaster, according to a new scientific study that may help increase the understanding of radiation on human health. The first data from non-human primates, the closest taxonomic relatives of humans, should make a notable contribution to future research. So here we have a literal case of the monkeys and our connection as two-leggeds. In 1 year hematological study on a population of wild Japanese monkeys inhabiting the forest area of Fukushima City. This area is located 70 kilometers from Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. So that's a little more technical stuff going on there in the article. That was found at Energy News, which gives a lot of reports about Fukushima, which is pretty much under the mainstream radar. And a couple of recent news articles I saw where it started to work on this show, where the whole that whole tipping point 100th monkey in different wording, Pepe Escobar used the word game changer in the US and a great deal of the EU. A monstrous grotesquerie has developed, packaging Putin as the new Stalinist Osama bin Laden. So far, his strategy on Ukraine was to be patient, what I called Vlad Lao Tzu, watching the Kiev gang hang themselves while trying to sit down with the EU in a civilized manner working for a political solution. Now, we may be facing a game changer because the mounting evidence, which Glazyev and Russian intel relayed to Putin, points to Ukraine as a battlefield, a concerted drive for regime change in Moscow, a concerted drive aiming for a destabilized Russia and even the possibility of a definitive provocation. Moscow, allied with the BRICS, that's Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, is actively working to bypass the US dollar, which is the anchor of a parallel US war economy based on printing worthless pieces of green paper. Progress is slow but tangible. Not only the BRICS, but BRICS aspirants, the G77, the non-aligned movement, NAM, the whole global South is absolutely fed up with the empire of chaos's non-stop bullying and want another paradigm in international relations. The U.S. counts on NATO, which it manipulates at will, and Mad Dog Israel, and perhaps the GCC, the Sunni petro-monarchy's partners in the Gaza carnage, which can be bought silenced with a slap on the wrist. That's from Escobar's article, Western Plutocracy Goes Bear Hunting. So this, just in case news changes, this is being recorded August 4th. So in case news changes, that's let you know. But there's another area of a key thing on the economical, geopolitical front is the wheeling and dealings going on globally and with the dollar. And Latin America, some few years ago, has started their own working, I think the Sucre, S-U-C-R-E, dealing with trying to get their own financial thing going on as compared with having to deal with the U.S. dollar. So here again is another potential hinge, 100th monkey point where have these various other countries, and as Escobar has highlighted in his writings, the Sino-Russian signing of contracts for energy resources, like 30-year pact. So there's another potential major shift going on, and basic analysis is that the U.S. empire is, and NATO and whoever aligns with them is starting to fear the loss of the hegemonic control, as you know, the almighty dollar has been the control of a lot of stuff. So there's a lot going on. And here's another little phrase, tipping point, mentioned in an article, Ahab Shorts the Market, a Dissident Voice. With every advance by alternative energy industries, the potential price of the world's oil reserves decreases. Today, 30% of Germany's electric power is being produced by alternative resources. How do Germany's new power producers affect the value of known oil reserves? Replacing oil-based energy generators with renewables, very simply, reduces the value of the known oil resources. The same supply with less demand equals lower value. It's a rudimentary equation. Will a tipping point soon arrive? In the near future, will there be a time when renewables control such a shape of energy production that the demand for oil might be so low, there is no financial incentive in opposing laws restricting carbon-based fuels? Will there soon come a time when the wealth of some nations is not measured by the amount of oil beneath their sands? That would be nice. So that's another question. Now that test, this is the article that I alluded to before, talking about oil in Israel. I'll read some more of it. But what if the price of oil becomes so low that the instability of the Middle East is of little consequence to the industrial world? What if there is no financial benefit in keeping those nations in turmoil? What if alternative energy sources turn the current flow of oil into a glut on the market? For many years, Israel has been America's forward base in the Middle East. What if, when oil becomes a too plentiful commodity, the United States no longer cares about events in that portion of the globe? Would Israel remain such a valued ally to its greatest benefactor? What would Israel do if it realized it would soon be of decreasing value to Imperial America? Would it seek to annex certain real estate immediately instead of waiting until a time when its currency is of decreasing benefit to its benefactor? Change of any kind involves cost. As renewable energy sources continue their march to eventually replace oil, markets will shift. The Earth's atmosphere may well change, and nations will reevaluate their geopolitical alliances. Some will see the future and act upon it sooner than others. When employing disruptive technologies such as today's renewable energy generators, there will always be consequences. That's written by Peter Breschard. So that's, I mean, that this whole, the gist I get while I'm talking about this stuff is that as harsh and as troubling as a lot of the news is and as nasty as a lot of the pollution is, by focusing on these potential tipping points, this potential paradigm shifts and what it would take. And, you know, at some regard, that's a whole discussion, but it can be a long road of shifting that's just beginning. That it's a long road to, say, convert gas stations to electric power stations. So there's both the long haul, no pun intended, the long haul, that's a hard word to say, a long haul. There's my New York accent coming through. The long haul, or there's the, so there's that on a practical level, but then on an idealistic and I think not impractical level is that some changes can happen quickly, and that the whole consciousness shift of suddenly, you know, energy is provided in a more affordable and fashion, and people see the value of it, and it catches on like an Oprah book, or it catches on like in a positive sense, those lawn mowers, air blowers, and all that stuff. So by focusing on that and realizing that there is a positive change that can happen, I think that helps, especially those who are in the thick of working and fighting for positive change, that to have that kind of goal, that lodestar, is a big help. You know, in the way that some inventions and some things, even business-wise, certain businesses that rely on a certain skill, but when a machine replaces that skill, you know, it's virtually overnight that industry is overruled. And so I think that, you know, it has its positives and negatives and different effects, but in the bigger picture, looking at the positive effects of all this, I think we need to work both practically, look at the details and the long range, and also look at the immediacy. You know, Pepe Escobar highlighted that with the BRICS, that it was being poo-pooed. The BRICS meeting, economic change was being poo-pooed in the mainstream media, but that, you know, he was saying it's a start. It's the you know, the journey begins with a step. And another note of the shift point. A couple of news stories of recent were headlines: refusing to kill their own, over 40 Ukrainian soldiers flee to Russia, and over 50 Israeli reservists declare, "We refuse to serve." So I found that, especially the people within, the ones that, you know, there's this talk about anybody who says anything about Israel negative is an anti-Semite. Well, you know, here you have Israelis within there saying, "We refuse to serve in this killing and war." So it's a great example. And then the Ukrainians is like a wonderful, beautiful reflection of that old saying, "The enemy, we found the enemy is us." So refusing to kill their own, I mean, is this not some of the greatest thing going on in the Middle East? The Arabs, Islam, and Israel being Abrahamic religions that are essentially brothers, and they're fighting each other. So it tunes into this thing about, it's almost like psychology. That's a whole psychological thing to study about self-hatred that is manifested outward. You know, that Jungian shadow phase where people are out there fighting presumably a shadow, but they haven't faced their own shadow. So I think this whole thing about realizing who we really are and learning to love ourselves is a first step in refusing to attack and kill one's own on this global scale. That's a big big importance. And, you know, that's another irony with, as a friend has pointed out to me a bunch of times, with African-American president, and yet we have huge poverty and huge difficulties for African-American peoples in the U.S. and also in Africa. There's a lot of wheeling and dealing going on in Africa. And this is, you know, this is under the auspices of a African-American president. So, again, this kind of labeling of help not hurting one's own, but see, identifying, looking in the mirror and identifying it, and again, that's I guess a more esoteric or psychological shift, but you know, that affects the outward manifestations. So kind of summing up a bit, another thing to mention is the Haudenosaunee peoples in the Two Row. That's that goes back hundreds of years. The Europeans, my paraphrasing of what I've learned, the Europeans were made an agreement with the native peoples that they would be in their boat and the natives would be in their canoe, and they would go alongside each other and to respect each other's ways in a two-row way. But, you know, the European mentality broke that agreement. And so it's some of the paradigm shift is not always just everybody. All of a sudden, everybody is doing it. Everybody's doing renewable. Everybody's using a non-electric mower. It's not just everybody, but we have to allow for the not just, you know, the two-row is one example. The Andean peoples and Latin American peoples espouse the multi-plural way, which again ties into cohere now, respecting all the nations, and when it comes to environmental decisions, respecting the, you know, not just how does this cost better and make our houses run on clean energy, and that's nice, but how it affects the trees and the bees and the worms and the, you know, the air. So that part of this multi-plural view is getting away from the egocentric. And again, these things that are reflecting, we live in an amazing time where these things are being reflected on many levels. We hear this Andean philosophy from South America coming through in a, you know, indigenous way about respecting all the nations. And then we hear some of the geopolitical actions. Putin was quoted a month or so ago as saying the world is no longer unipolar. So this is the same message is coming through these various channels, and how it all coheres and hooks up and works towards that 100th monkey shift. You know, that I think that's a big thing. And I'll just kind of wrap it up with sort of an editorial note saying that there is that practicalness of working towards such shifts, but there's also a way to get caught in the illusion of, you know, nothing will be right until we get that shift. But that can be a trap and can be defeating and psychologically or however. But I think it's helpful for people to realize that, you know, when you do something, if you live a certain way, to see that you are already aligned with that way, that you are already the 100th monkey in a positive way, and that's affecting how you live your life and what you do, and that you know, in its way helps bring about a bigger change. But that, you know, to put in perspective how one lives one's life, and then how that connects with what's quote out there in the world. And so I think these two things that I was thinking originally were somewhat distinct are actually come together, and the Be Cohere Now and the 100th monkey tied together. So that's an example for creative types to just start doing stuff and jump in there. And, you know, you learn, one of my biggest learnings from writings over the years and doing these shows is what I learn as I'm doing it. What I learn as I'm doing it. And a lot of times I don't know stuff, but as I'm talking, it comes together, it coheres. So everybody's got their own approach, but sometimes just getting it out there is a help. And I think that's a help too, for people to get away from being isolated and to start talking, start communicating more. You're not going to have all the answers, but by talking about it, you start the process, and that helps bring about some answers. And thanks to all of you who listen to this show, and to those of you who've listened to every show, a big tip of the hat, and I appreciate a lot that you you take the time to listen to what gets said and the conversations, the interviews with interesting people. And, you know, it's the Between the Lines helps remind that, you know, there's things that are happening on paper and ideas, and then there's also the practicality of how we put those into action. So, All right, thank you so much, and thanks for listening. Have a good one. And we'll go out with the last track on Yang Ying's CD Elixir, which is subtitled Music for Moving and Still Meditation. Interesting concept right there. Think of meditation as still, but there's moving and still meditation. And by the way, on the back of the CD, Elixir was composed and performed by master musician and longtime practitioner of meditation. The songs are varied in tempo and melody. Some tunes are designed to lead the listener to a peaceful meditative state, while others are a joyous musical expression of the ineffable sensations and feelings encountered during meditation. And this track is called Aspiring Emptiness.